David Farah's on the panel today, the boss of Curia Polling and the founder of KiwiBlog. And with him is Steve McCabe, critic and science teacher, specialising in physics of Auckland. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. Having a chuckle at that news item about social media messages being displayed on billboards, for I can't think of anything more likely to make people crash than displaying a live Twitter stream on a billboard next to a motorway.
Yeah, I missed the news item, but yeah, I can imagine. But I can also imagine that's probably part of our future, isn't it? That kind of tech. Or are we going to be sensible and say, no, not while you're driving?
OMG, I hope not.
I think if you ban cell phones and cars, you probably don't want to have live Twitter streams on the billboards.
No, although they do in the science fiction movies. They've got all those devices, so maybe they are on the way. Thank you for listening to the news, David, while Steve and I were chatting. Because did you go, and I never ascertained, did you go to One Direction or not?
Heavens no.
Oh, okay.
I dodged the bullet.
Oh, okay. I thought you had to take your daughter.
No, good Lord, no. She gets very offended when I refer to him as One Dimension. I cannot be doing with this whole boy band thing. So I had a wonderful time on Saturday night. I stayed at home. The wife took my 14-year-old daughter to go and see him. Took a friend, and I stayed home and had a very pleasant, relaxing evening, not watching One Direction.
Ah, because
definitely the way to go.
Because she wouldn't want to be seen with Dad. Did you call them One Dimension?
I did. I get into a lot of trouble doing that, but it suits them.
Okay, so she went with Mum.
Yes.
And had an altogether better time.
Vastly better than she would have had with her dad standing next to her going, is it nearly over yet? It would have been pretty grim.
You would have ruined her entire evening.
Well, I would have certainly tried, yes. The thing is, though, I mean, it was ridiculous. They played at, now is it the Trust Stadium in Auckland? It's like 5,000-seater venue for currently, you know, the saviours of pop music. And I think the promoters must have realised that they'd missed a huge opportunity. They could have filled out anywhere they wanted to.
The National Convention Centre, Steve.
As soon as it's been built, yes, indeed, absolutely. You know, get it built in time, they can host them, because they're coming back. Thing is, these tickets went on sale. The boys have barely left Wellington. They put the tickets on sale for October of 2013. They're selling tickets 18 months out, trying to ride the momentum of this, because they know, come 2013, October 2013, they'll have scrubbed up five new pretty young boys. They've got a new boy band, and there's one who now.
You don't think One Direction are going to be around in October 2013? And that's why they're selling the tickets now?
I know it's shockingly cynical of me to suggest this, but yes. I think they're milking it while it's worth, because if they waited 6 months from now to try and sell them, then people are going, now, who are they again?
They may turn out to be Take That or one of the enduring pop bands, but you're thinking they'll be more like the Bay City Rollers.
The Bay City, City Rollers were good.
Oh, come on.
Hey, that's my era, that's my country.
Paper Lace is still enduring. They're touring the country at the moment. You see, it's been a few years since Paper Lace came along.
Oh,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe One Direction will be the same. Steve McCabe's with us, and David Farah is too. Have you been doing anything exciting, as exciting?
Well, I tried to buy tickets for One Direction's, but Trevor Mallard wanted to set my buy now price, so I missed out.
Yes.
Instead, I spent Tuesday night at a launch of a new company and website called Gamefruit. And what was quite unique about what they've done, it's a group of Kiwis, and this may go global, is this site allows you to design your own computer games, even if you know nothing like me about programming or coding.
Wow.
It allows you to go in and you select all the things, it takes you a few hours, and you can design your own game, which will then be available eventually in the Apple App Store. And on the night, they had someone, you couldn't see who they were at first. You just saw a big screen and someone designing their game on screen, moving things. And then as the crowd dispersed, I saw this 9 or 10-year-old girl having the time of her life making a game for the iPhone. And in fact, there were 3 or 4 kids there all going away. So I actually think this is going to be absolutely huge, because just like blog software caught on because it allowed people who knew nothing about HTML to publish on the internet, this is going to allow people who know nothing about coding to make their own games.
It can't be that easy.
It really is. In fact, I've promised them that when I have time in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to try and make my own game. It's going to be set in the beehive, and you start off as a little junior backbencher, and at first you have to fight the media. Then you have to fight the opposition MPs, and finally you have to fight the government ministers and your quest to become the prime minister. And the final evil creature that you'll have to battle will be, of course, the prime minister, who will have Teflon armour, so any attacks bounce off him. So I think it could be a very popular game.
Yeah, I imagine the Beehive game would be popular. Especially if you put real life, if your real life experience into the aspects of the game, David, we'd be all very interested in that. Okay, so the game Fruit, it sounds amazing. So that's F-R-O-O-T.
That's right.
Okay.
And yeah, like I say, it's the Kiwi gaming industry, actually, if I met their executive director a few days ago, is one of becoming one of our quite major export earners. We're doing very well in this area, and it's one of the best forms of exports you can have because there's no cost, there's no environmental factors, there's no freight. It's just pure money.
All right, that's a great recommendation, Game Fruit. Thank you. Game on with the panel, David Farrar, Steve McCabe. Today we learned that Sir Peter Jackson had raised concerns in 2010 about immigration rules required to bring Hobbit film workers into the country, and the government gave him an assurance it would intervene to ensure he wouldn't face any problems. Charles Chauvel will join us on this presently. You got a problem with that, gentlemen?
I can't say I've got a problem because I never could understand why we had a law which allowed the Small Union Actors' Equity to effectively set immigration policy and, you know, to have major international firms say, these are who we want to cast, and then they'd have to battle and have someone say, oh, I'm not sure that person's famous enough, we want you to use a local Kiwi. In this global market where countries are competing for films, I think it was a law or a policy that had its time.
The notes from that meeting show Sir Peter told Chris Finlayson and SPADA, I think, that the two big issues were the status of self-employed contractors and actors' equity being able to vet employment of actors. What do you think about this?
I think David's got a good point, that it is a little bit odd that you've got the two organisations, the ones that we've had mentioned here, Aquis Equity and the Technicians Guild, basically holding veto power over immigration policy into New Zealand. That does seem a little bit odd. These are presumably unelected, unaccountable organisations who get to decide who is and who isn't worthy to come and work in New Zealand within very, very specific fields. Do other industries get to do that?
Charles Chauvel, I'll treat that as a rhetorical question. Charles Chauvel is the Labour Party's arts spokesman and a former panellist of ours, as a matter of fact, and kindly joins us. Charles, good afternoon.
G'day, Jim. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. All right, well, David and Steve don't see much wrong with this. What do you see wrong with it?
Well, I suppose the problem is the characterisation of what the two associations were able to do. In common with most developed countries with a film and creative industry, what the procedures allowed submissions to be made about was whether or not there were qualified New Zealanders able to do the sorts of roles that were required before the production company then went offshore to try to recruit talent. And the reason for those requirements, as in all these other countries that have them, is that if you want to have a vibrant creative sector in your own country, rather than always relying on importing talent, usually from the US, you need to have some sort of protections for those local workers. And all it was a first dibs type situation. I think it makes a lot of sense, and it's one of the reasons that we've managed in the past to have world-class actors, world-class techies, world-class directors and producers like Peter Jackson himself. I think it's the sort of thing you dilute in a secret request from somebody making a film at your peril.
How do you reconcile the need to recognise and expose local talent with the need to bring some of the world's leading actors and actresses here for box office reasons to make movies as big as that, though? That's the problem.
Look, of course you can do both. And what the Australians do is they have a requirement where if somebody's going to make a big film in Australia, that for perhaps one of the lead roles, they consider an Australian, and that's how people like Cate Blanchett got their start. Those sort of policies make a lot of sense. They make sure that locals get a fair go and get a chance at being considered in role. In the current situation, as I understand, we're talking a lot more about the technical staff involved. And again, you know, you don't want not to have local talent who've got those skills. You don't want to have to import people with those skills all the time because all the others have moved to Australia where these requirements exist.
But a government, Charles, any government in recent history, also wants to expedite projects that are going to be beneficial to the country for decades to come, like The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. And
Sir Peter... why I think, you know, governments, successive governments, have done things like give enormous tax benefits to producers and directors like Peter Jackson so that they can bring this sort of investment into New Zealand, and it's very welcome. I suppose all I'm saying is, do we want to throw out all our rules and all our procedures that have been thought about over time, exist for a very sensible reason, have given rise to, in large part, our thriving creative sector, just because somebody makes a secret request to Chris Finlayson, Jerry Brownlee and John Key? It's certainly not the sort of policy making that I think we want to see emerging in New Zealand.
I understand, but is it qualitatively any different from, you know, kowtowing to the French over the release of Prieur and Mafar, or the Chinese over, you know, the screening off of protesters from the majestic gaze of the Premier? I mean, we bow to other countries and to things that are going to make New Zealand's life economically easier. We've done it for a long time now, haven't we?
Well, I suppose it's a question of what we want, what price we want to pay to have a particular a type of foreign direct investment. For my money, I'd rather keep procedures that gave the local creative sector first dibs on the odd chance for a decent role and ongoing development of local talent. Clearly others have another view, but I think most Kiwis actually would, when they think about it, think that these procedures make a lot of sense.
I think the concern that's being raised here, though, is not so much the fact that these guilds do have this power, which is established, whether we like it or not. That's what New Zealand law says.
Well, it's not even that anymore, Steve. I think the requirement's been diluted now so that the unions have 3 days to make submissions on whether or not there are locals who might be able to fulfill the role. So that's the level of minimalist requirement that exists.
In this particular instance, yeah, that's become the case. But you think in other spheres, generally speaking, the way it's going to work is if an employer wants to bring in offshore talent for whatever reason, there's generally speaking a requirement in order to get a work visa to demonstrate that there isn't local talent that can fulfil that role. So,
and I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think it's the sort of requirement that we ought to operate in the creative sector.
Yeah.
And obviously it's a question of how you put that requirement in place.
Right. And I think this was a key thing, in that generally it's been the government that decides whether someone can come in, is there a skill shortage. Rather, the former policy was the union was the primary decider, and you could appeal to the minister. And, you know, for my 2 cents, I think having it now that the government decides but the union gets consulted, even on a short time frame, is more normal when we look at the other sectors.
But then handing that authority over to, in this particular instance, Warner Brothers, and basically saying, look, if you we will give you the final say on our immigration policy, that's a little bit concerning.
I think that's exactly the point here, that you know, you can claim that it's special pleading to have the union required to be consulted, but what happened here is ministers simply gave a blanket assurance to Peter Jackson that he would face no impediments whatsoever. They set aside the requirement that locals be given first dibs on roles, and I think that's the problem here from the point of view of maintaining a flourishing creative sector.
Yeah, but does it really erode our sovereignty, which is a phrase I heard today, any more so than other compromises other governments have done over the years, Charles?
Well, you know, again, it depends on the price you want to pay. I'd prefer that we avoided the whiff of the Banana Republic. And, you know, I think deals like the sort of Sky City will relax the gambling laws for you if you build a convention centre are not the sort of policy deals that New Zealanders want to see. We are well known for our transparency and our openness. And for my money, I'd like to keep that.
Okay, but is that a reflection of New Zealand's declining position economically in the world, that that's the future we probably have to face in a variety of areas?
It's worth
I'm more optimistic for our future than that, Mike. I think we can do a lot better than that, and we should back ourselves more.
All right. It's perhaps worth noting that I think in the end, despite what the policy may have been, I think New Zealand actors did pretty well with Lord of the Rings, where certainly weren't any of the 4 or 5 star roles, but there were a lot of ones like Craig Parker who certainly shot to prominence with his roles there.
All right, thank you.
And that's a good example of the way the policy operated. That's the policy that Peter Jackson asked be set aside for The Hobbit. So let's see what happens there.
All right, thank you, Charles Chauvel. It's 22 minutes past 4 o'clock. David Farris, Steve McCabe on the panel. Residents concerned about the behaviour of nudists on part of Papamoa Beach have met with Tauranga's Mayor Stuart Crosby to discuss these issues, have approached the Mayor with concerns of offensive behaviour in the Western Bay of Plenty. Mr Sean Gallagher, for example, says on one occasion he was forced to check the stretch of beach near his home before allowing his young granddaughters to play on the sand. And his take on this is that some of the nudists are holding residents to ransom. Stuart Crosby will join us shortly. We've had emails from listeners about this in the past, some almost incredulous emails about what they see on beaches in Auckland as well, and believe me, they see quite a bit. We'll call it exhibitionism. Do you think people have got a right to object to that?
Depends on exactly what's going on. The nude bathing is legal. We don't have people. If you want to bathe nude, that's fair enough. Also, there are, I believe, in this country, laws against public indecency, and it's going to be presumably down to the police and the courts to draw the line between the two and to decide if a certain act transgresses and crosses over that line.
Yeah, OK.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a bit like pornography, where it's going to be very, very difficult to define it, but by God, you'll know it when you see it.
David Farrer.
Well, I got asked on Facebook what my position on nudity on beaches was, and my answer was it depends on their age and gender. But more seriously, I think that as long as it's just lying there, sunbathing, it shouldn't be an issue. But where people, and there are some beaches where it's known, shall we say, certain activity takes place, couples may get together, I think that is a definite no-no.
Okay. So nudity, fine. Nobody minds that much. As you say, it's legal. Exhibitionism, on the other hand, obviously awakes powerful antipathy for a reason. People don't like that. Would that be a fair summation?
Well, it depends. If they're walking from their towel to, the water to have a swim, etc., some people might not like that, but I have to say it wouldn't terribly upset me.
Tauranga Mayor Stuart Crosby kindly joining the panel on this. Stuart, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. The area in question, it used to be deserted or not frequented much in the old days.
Oh, absolutely. The site itself has been a site for nudists going way back to the 50s. And, of course, in those early days, it was between Mount Maunganui and Papamoa Beach. It was literally in the middle of nowhere. And over the decades, residential development has actually come towards it. And I guess that has really brought this issue to the fore. But it has been an issue probably for the last 20-odd years.
What are the residents objecting to you? What did they tell you when they met you, Stuart?
Well, it was a very good meeting, and they weren't ranting or raving or anything like that. They were just generally concerned. The three categories. First of all, there is what people would call genuine nudists who go down the beach, lie on their towels, and generally do not cause a problem. The vast majority of residents do not have an issue with those type of people. There are some that still find that offensive. But the real two groups that they are having difficulty with are those that will deliberately, in the nude, get up and approach people as they're walking along the beach, either on their own or with their families. That's one group. The other group are sexual deviants who do all types of sexual acts in and around the sand dunes. Of course, that's a police matter, but it does happen there in and around that site as well. So those are the two categories that these people really have an issue with. By and large, just general nudity, as long as it's discreet, they don't have a problem with it.
Okay, so what did you tell them in terms of what your council's attitude towards it is?
Well, from the council's perspective, we've looked at this from about 1990 to 94, and your commentators are right, it's actually not an offence to be nude on a public beach. And then it goes through different degrees, and there's various case law on it, et cetera, et cetera. So I told them our council was not and could not be in a position to put in a bylaw to ban nudity, and they actually didn't want that. Then I challenged them to take their beach back. It's as much is theirs as it is anybody else's. And so we had a discussion around that and came up with some outcomes, and I think that's the best way forward.
It's all very well to say take the beach back, but if you're afraid to take your daughter or your granddaughter for a walk on it, then that is far easier said than done, isn't it?
You are right. It is far easier said than done, but I firmly believe that they are going to approach that issue in terms of taking their beach back. In the first instance, they do intend to go down there with adults only, not children, and exercise their public right as a beach. They intend to take cameras. They intend to put notices on these people's vehicles to say, hey, you're welcome to enjoy the beach as much as we are, but please respect a bit of common decency.
Can you see a stoush brewing, though? Because people are reporting some quite aggressive behaviour on Auckland beaches when people object to what they call exhibitionism as opposed to nudity, and they say they get a pretty stern reaction from people telling them where to go. This is also the problem, isn't it, when you actually get the two groups, one group wanting to be there and do what they want and the other group not wanting them there?
Yes, and that's actually already occurred, where there have been some confrontations. But again, at those two levels I'm talking about, which are these people that deliberately get up and parade of individuals or families, and those doing lewd and indecent behaviour, we had the police there, and they said, look, please record the issue, contact us, so we build up a database. If we are around, we will come and assist. So there are some, I guess ultimately, literally, they want to draw a line in the sand and say, hey, we don't mind this, but we do object to that, and we have as much right to be on this beach as anybody else. You are right, there may well be a degree of confrontation, but that just simply may have to happen.
All right, thank you. Stuart Crosby on the panel. You see, your daughter who went to One Direction the other night, I mean, how would you feel, or how would anybody feel about their children going down to the beach and seeing what Stuart called, well, not even indecent, but lewd behaviour? That's the thing.
Yeah, wouldn't be crazy about it. I mean, dare we say the bottom line here is going to have to, I'm sorry, has to be, you know, are you doing anything with your clothes off that you wouldn't naturally do with your clothes on the beach? And if you are, then maybe you need to rein it in a little bit. But even then, even you know, simple lying on the towel, sans clothes, I don't particularly want to be taking my daughter down the beach on that day either, necessarily. Certainly getting up to, let's say, couples activities, it is not something you should be doing in public anyway.
No.
A solution Stuart Crosby talked about, recording it and reporting it to the police. I'm not sure if he meant literally, but really if someone is parading around being offensive and you have a cell phone, I'd say it would make a very good video to upload to YouTube. And I suspect they really wouldn't want that degree of publicity.
No, an exhibitionist wouldn't want publicity, surely.
No. I think some people, to be honest, though, would be afraid to do that recording. They'd be scared of what would happen.
Yeah, I don't think you'd want to do it from close range.
All right. Thank you, David. David Farrar, Steve McCabe on the panel.